Welcome to episode 51 of the Neuro Network. We've all heard it. Dopamine. It's the pleasure molecule. It's what you get from chocolate, likes on Instagram, falling in love, right? Well, what if I told you dopamine has nothing to do with pleasure? Not directly, anyway. Today, we're digging into what dopamine really does and why your brain is wired not for pleasure, but for pursuit. Okay, welcome back. Today, I'd like to introduce our new co-host, Molly.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Of course. All right, let's talk about dopamine. You've heard the buzzwords, dopamine hits, dopamine rush, dopamine detox. It's been blamed for social media addiction, obsession with likes, binge watching, even that second or seventh cookie. And it's always framed the same way. Dopamine is the pleasure molecule. But here's the thing. It's not exactly true. So dopamine isn't about pleasure, at least not in the way that we think. It's not the thing that makes you enjoy the cookie, the Instagram like, text from your crush. It's the thing that makes you want it in the first place. It's the anticipation, but not the satisfaction. It's the motivation, not the actual moment.
Wait, so all this time I thought that dopamine was the pleasure.
It's not exactly the pleasure. Specifically, it's the moments before you take that first bite of the cookie or that second before you indulge in a drink or a sexual activity.
So if dopamine isn't the reward, what is it?
Dopamine, it's more about the pursuit. It's not exactly the reward. The reward that you feel when you achieve a goal or you eat the cookie, that comes from opioids, not dopamine. Dopamine is the molecule that drives you to satisfy a craving. And you're not wired necessarily for the reward, at least not as strongly as you might think. What the brain is really largely wired for is the pursuit. So dopamine, which is a very strong molecule in the brain, it's your brain's motivation molecule. It doesn't peak when you achieve something. It peaks in the anticipation of achieving something, in the effort, in the climb, if you will. And neuroscience calls it incentive salience. So your brain assigns value to what you don't have yet, what you're moving towards.
So if dopamine's not the thing that actually makes us feel good, then what does?
Yeah, so pleasure, that's handled by an entirely different system. That's handled by your opiates. So the thing that gives you the, this is something that is pleasurable, this is something that makes me feel like I've achieved something, that comes from opioids. But dopamine, on the other hand, dopamine is the drive. So back in the 1950s and 60s, researchers started mapping out different brain circuits that were related to the reward system. And they found that stimulating certain areas caused rats to press a lever over and over again, sometimes even up to thousands of times per hour. At first, they thought, aha, we found the pleasure center. But what they were really seeing wasn't the stimulation of a pleasure center in the rat. What they were seeing was the stimulation of an area that caused the drive to push the lever. So they weren't seeing bliss. They weren't seeing satisfaction. What they were actually looking at was pure, raw, motivational force. And that circuit that they were stimulating in the brain and the circuit that they were studying eventually became known as the mesolimbic dopamine pathway. And it runs from an area in the brain called the ventral tegmental area, sometimes called the VTA, to an area called the nucleus accumbens. And at its core, this system together, or this collection of nuclei in the brain, is what we like to call the reward system. But in reality, it's not exactly the reward system per se. What it really is the pursuit system. So it fires not when we get the reward, but when we predict that there will be a reward in the behaviors that we're doing. So those moments before you take your first bite of pumpkin pie at Thanksgiving, yeah, that's what we're talking about here. So the truth is, dopamine doesn't make you feel pleasure. It makes you chase it. And if that sounds like a setup for obsession, compulsion, addiction, that's exactly where we're going to go. Okay, so we busted the myth. Dopamine isn't about pleasure itself. It's about wanting, craving, anticipating. So how does that play out in everyday life? Let's take a look at one of dopamine's favorite playgrounds. And that, of course, is your phone. So every time that you get a little notification, a little sound, that gives you a little bit of a dopamine tease. Not, though, because of what it is. Receiving a sound from your phone doesn't make you have any sort of pleasure. But what it triggers in you is the thought of what it might be. What is that notification? What can the outcome of opening your phone from that notification actually trigger? The possibility of something that might be good. Is it a text from someone special? A viral post? Maybe it's a meme that's one of the funniest things that you've ever seen. Your brain doesn't know it yet, but that uncertainty is where dopamine thrives. Because dopamine, again, it isn't pleasure, it's anticipation. And that drive towards something that might be good, it's not the cookie, it's the urge to reach for it.
So are you saying that your brain is a prediction machine?
Exactly. So one of the most powerful triggers of dopamine in the brain is called a reward prediction error, right? Essentially, when something turns out better than is expected, your dopamine spikes, not because the thing was pleasurable in and of itself, but because your brain learns from that surprise. And it says, hey, that was better than I thought. Let's go after that again. But here's the twist. Once a reward becomes predictable, dopamine doesn't fire when you get it. So it only fires that first time when that reward is better than you thought.
So like a novelty moment?
Exactly. A moment of novelty. After that, dopamine switches its role. And then it fires when you expect it. So you get that cue of the smell of cookies from the kitchen or that sound of a slot machine. That's where dopamine says, aha, I know that the outcome of that sound is something pleasurable for me. So go and get it. And that's why slot machines are engineered to be so unpredictable. It's not just the reward. It's the, maybe there's going to be a reward. That 1 in 100 jackpot, that occasional dopamine spike trains your brain to keep pulling the lever. Or in modern times, keep scrolling on your feed if we're talking about Instagram. That's why social media, it works the exact same way. Sometimes your post gets 3 likes, sometimes it gets 300. And your brain eats that unpredictability up like a hungry lab rat. And it's wild that the uncertainty itself is actually more addictive than the reward.
How on earth did scientists even figure that out?
That one is actually kind of cool. So in classic dopamine experiments, scientists, I alluded to this earlier, they wired electrodes into a rat's brain to stimulate the dopamine system direct. So what they did is they put a rat in a cage and they put a little wire that went into the reward system of the brain, that mesolimbic pathway. And what happened was they gave the rat a little bit of a lever, like a little lever that they could press. So press it and you get a hit of dopamine. And you know what happened? The rat pressed the lever over and over, hundreds of times an hour. It ignored food. It ignored water. Eventually, it even collapsed from complete exhaustion. But the weird thing was it collapsed from pure exhaustion, not because it was happy, but because it couldn't stop wanting to press the lever. It just was obsessed with pressing this lever to the point that it almost killed itself.
Okay, so what does this mean for humans then?
So obviously humans aren't rats in cages, at least not all the time. But when you look at modern tech, fast food, gaming, porn, gambling, we're building smarter and smarter levers, just like that rat was given, right? Instead of having a lever that we press in order to get the dopamine, we're getting these dopamine hits from things like fast food, gaming, porn, gambling, like I said. And our dopamine systems, as far as we can tell, are not all that different from rats. They run the exact same. So they're still running on that same ancient code that's conserved across species. So next time you find yourself stuck in a loop, either refreshing, scrolling, chasing that next little spark, remember, it's not that the reward is so good that all of these things are worth it. It's that your brain thinks that there might be a good reward. You keep scrolling, you keep scrolling, you keep scrolling. Why? Like the act of scrolling itself isn't all that exciting. Literally looking at videos for 1 second, 2 seconds, and just scrolling on to the next, it's not all that exciting. In fact, you usually feel guilty about it after you've been doing it for an hour and you don't see anything that sparks joy. But dopamine's in there that whole time that you're scrolling and it's whispering to you saying, maybe the next one is going to give me that little thing that gives me the feeling of joy. Maybe it's going to be the funniest video I ever see. Maybe it's going to be some motivational quote that will inspire me to do my next project, to move on to the next step in my career. That's what you're looking for. And dopamine's going to keep firing in order to keep you scrolling till you find something that gives you what you're looking for. That's what dopamine is. All right, so let's take everything that we've talked about so far. If dopamine is this molecule that drives motivation, then addiction is what happens when someone gets stuck with this dopamine flooding and there's no end in sight for it. So in a healthy brain, dopamine surges when there's something that's worth chasing, a goal, a reward, a connection. But when it comes to addiction, that same dopamine system more or less gets hijacked. The brain itself becomes laser focused on one thing. And what is it? The drug or that behavior, the hit, no matter what the cost is.
That's scary. Okay, so why does the brain lock in on one thing like that?
It's a good question. So drugs like cocaine, methamphetamine, nicotine, opioids, they don't just give you a little boost. They, like I said, they hijack the system by flooding the brain with massive, massive unnatural levels of dopamine. We're talking 2, 3, even 10 times the dopamine you'd get from food or from sex. So a little bit of an analogy. Imagine your brain's reward system is like a volume knob, right? Normal experiences turn it up to say 5 or 6. Well, drugs come in and they crank it up to 11, 12, 13. Once your brain experiences that level of stimulation, it remembers. It wires itself to prioritize. Your brain is this neuroplastic, amazing machine that likes to reorganize itself in order to focus on things that it believes may be important. You've all heard it. Cells that fire together, wire together. Hebbian plasticity. If these cells are firing all the time with excessive amounts of dopamine, they're going to rewire themselves in order to prioritize that dopamine. And the result? Everything else, eating, relationships, work, they all start to feel pretty flat. Why would you go for a walk when your brain's screaming for a dopamine tsunami that it can get from the drugs, from the sex, from the nicotine, from the opioids? That's where addiction becomes an all-encompassing type of neuromodulatory event that can consume your entire life. And there's the cruel twist with it. Like I said, the brain is adaptable. So over time, the brain adapts to these addictions and it builds tolerance. The same hit doesn't feel as good as it used to, but the wanting, that craving, it doesn't go away. In fact, it gets even stronger.
So the person's chasing something they don't even like anymore?
Exactly. And that's what neuroscientists like to call the wanting versus the liking split. You can want something intensely, even if you no longer enjoy it. And that's the hallmark of addiction. Dopamine drives the compulsion, but not necessarily the pleasure. Typically, it's the compulsion towards the drug that is addictive. The drug itself doesn't necessarily give you as much as it used to. It fades away over time to the point where the person is addicted to pursuing the drug. But once they have the drug, all it does is it just removes that want, that drive to seek it. And this same mechanism shows up in things like gambling addiction, compulsive eating, porn addiction, even social media. It doesn't have to be these hard drugs that we typically associate ourselves with. And that's the scary thing, because all of these things run on the same neural pathway. This neural pathway isn't just specific to drugs or drug addiction. It's being fired when we do things, regardless of whether or not it's coming from these behavioral things like gambling, compulsive eating, etc., or if it's coming artificially from things like cocaine. Anything essentially that can trigger unpredictable dopamine-driven rewards, especially when it's fast, repeatable, that can rewire the brain in this way to develop this addiction. And that's one of the reasons why a lot of these, quote, hard drugs are so addictive in the first place, is because of the fact that they spike that dopamine system fast. I just said that when these dopamine reward driven pathways, when they occur quickly in a rapid rate, it triggers the addiction even stronger. So cocaine hits the brain immediately. It gives this huge spike and it becomes especially addictive. Whereas things like gambling, compulsive eating, these type of behaviors, they might take a little bit longer to develop, right? But you're still getting the same effect. It's just the time course at which it happens that can be a factor in how strongly it is at developing the addiction. And that's not to say that all of these things come down to a testament of willpower, your willpower in order to prevent that addiction from happening. No, it's neuroplasticity at its finest. It's learning. It's just on overdrive. Addiction itself is the brain adapting too well to a toxic pattern, or a pattern that is being put forth in place by your behavioral actions that has a detrimental effect on your body.
So if the brain rewires towards addiction, does that mean we can rewire it back?
Yes. Well, that same brain can wire itself towards addiction, which means that it can also rewire itself away from it. It's hard and it's slow, but it is possible. Because dopamine itself isn't evil. It's just a neurochemical. In the fridge in the lab, we have dopamine in vials. It's just it looks like water in a little clear container. It's not itself evil. It's not a villain. It's just doing its job. It wants to help you chase what matters. And in ancient times, when food was sparse and things like that, you needed something that honed in behaviors in order to get something that was beneficial to you. And so when it came to hunting, when it came to gathering, somehow your brain needed to figure out a way to strengthen the pathways that drove you to find those berries, to get that meat. And this is why it's there. But the trick in all of this is teaching your brain in order to crave the right things. Because before, it used to be the right things. When these pathways were forged in this neurodevelopment of over time. But nowadays, we have things that have very negative consequences that can be perceived as pleasurable. All right. So far, we've seen that dopamine can drive us to chase, to crave, to obsess, even when it's not very good for us. But what happens when that drive just disappears? What happens when the world feels like nothing's even worth pursuing? We talked about addiction being something of hyper pursuit. But what about the other side of the dopamine story? Dopamine depletion.
So is that like depression?
Yeah, essentially. That's why in some forms of depression, the most common symptom isn't sadness. It's apathy. You don't cry. You don't break down. You just stop caring altogether. And that's called anhedonia, the inability to feel pleasure or motivation. And dopamine is a big player in that. Now, I'm not saying that depression is only caused by changes in dopamine levels. There's also serotonin, norepinephrine, environmental factors, trauma. But the dopamine piece, it helps to explain why people can feel so disconnected from life during periods of depression.
So depression isn't always sadness. Like it could sometimes just be emptiness.
Yes, exactly. Your brain wants to want things, but your brain isn't responding during these times of depression. And it goes even deeper. Take Parkinson's disease, for example. It's a neurodegenerative disorder that damages dopamine-producing neurons, specifically in a region called the substantia nigra. Without enough dopamine, movement becomes stiff and slow. But it's not just motor control. Many people with Parkinson's also experience dopamine-related mood changes, like apathy, fatigue, or loss of drive. Why? Because the same neurotransmitter that helps you move also helps you care.
So it's like your brain runs out of motivation.
Exactly. And here's the twist. Even things that should feel good, hanging out with your friends, working out, finishing a project, they don't light up the system anymore. Not because they're not valuable. They are valuable, but because the dopamine pathways aren't responding in the same way that they used to. All right, but before things get too heavy, let's talk about some hope. Because here's the incredible thing about the brain. Like I said, it's plastic. Not like Tupperware, but it's malleable. Neurons change, circuits adapt. It's one of the things that makes the brain difficult to study sometimes because it's always one step ahead of you. You want to study one circuit, it'll change its behavior and start doing that same behavior from a different circuit. Really makes things fun. And the dopamine system, it too is plastic. It can recover just as it adapted in order to create these periods of addiction or depression. It can recover itself back to a state where you feel better. You feel like you're functioning at your highest potential. And so there's different things that can trigger that. Exercise, for example, especially cardio, is one of the best natural dopamine boosters out there. Now, I'm not saying that more dopamine is better. We've seen that in addiction, that's not the case. But if we're talking about things like overcoming depression or lack of dopamine, look for things that might be dopamine boosting, like exercise, for example. So novelty, learning new skills, also setting small achievable goals. These are all things that can help to reactivate those dopaminergic circuits that may be tampered down in states of depression. Even something as simple as a walk in nature or listening to music that you really love, those things can start to begin to shift that neurochemistry in the brain.
And so over time, can this reconnect the circuits?
It can. So you don't need to wait for dopamine to show up first before taking action. Sometimes the action itself is what brings dopamine back online. It's not about forcing joy. It's more about creating conditions for the system to slowly start responding again. You're not just telling yourself, this makes me happy, so it's going to re-kick on my dopamine system. No, it's about putting yourself in situations where you know that these are things that bring joy or they used to bring joy, and over time, letting your brain itself start to relearn those joyful moments. So if you've been feeling stuck, unmotivated, or flat, it doesn't mean that you're broken, you're depressed. It might mean that just the dopamine system needs some fine tuning. And the beautiful thing is change is possible. Your brain is always listening and always learning.
So what you're saying is that our brains are always wanting to seek novelty?
Sort of. So with all neurochemicals, it comes down to having the right amount of that neurochemical at the right time. It's not about having more. It's not about having less. It's about having the right amount when you need it. And so when it comes to seeking novelty, dopamine is a big player in strengthening the pathway within your brain to pursue something that if you did something novel and it had a pleasurable outcome, that you do it again. But at the same time, if you're always going down looking for novelty, if you're always trying to find that pursuit of the next pleasure, it can also become pathogenic in the sense that you're always hyper-focused on getting a dopamine hit. Because remember that first time that you experience something pleasurable, you get a spike in dopamine, which sort of revs up that pathway for the future. And this is why things like cheating, for example, in relationships become something of a very common issue. We are hardwired in order to somewhat pursue something novel because of the fact that it may give pleasure, that grass may be greener, right? And so if you're in this hyper fixated state where you're always looking for something novelty, or you're always looking for novelty, it can start to have negative influences on your life where you think that, you know what, maybe the grass is greener. Maybe if I just try it, I'm going to find that pleasure. But like I said, when you actually get that final hit of achieving that goal or whatever it is that you're going for, it's usually not as satisfactory as you thought it was going to be, because the opioids themselves, yeah, they make you feel sort of pleasurable or you have some satisfaction, but it's not as big of a spark as you thought it was going to be. The whole game in the brain is the pursuit, not the end. And so it's about having the right amount at the right times, because you don't need to be hyper fixated on novelty. Okay, so we've busted the dopamine myth. We've seen how it drives craving, how it can get hijacked, and how it can even disappear when things like depression or burnout hits. But now comes the big question. How do you work with your dopamine and not against it?
Like, is there a way that you can actually train your brain for like better motivation?
Absolutely. And here's the good news. Dopamine, like I said, is not your enemy. It's not some trickster molecule that's trying to ruin your life. It's an ally. It's a neurochemical. It's in there for a reason. You just have to know how to guide it. So what are some actionable steps that can be taken in order to have a bit more predictable dopamine responses? Because we've seen that not having correct dopamine responses at the right time can lead to bad things as far as health outcomes. So first and foremost, even if it sounds cheesy, set small, achievable goals. Your brain loves the pursuit towards completion of a task. It seems to be more strongly wired to go towards the pursuit of completing a task, and completing a task itself isn't as pleasurable as the pursuit is. So every time that you check off a task, even a tiny one, it's going to be involved in that pursuit towards completing something. And this is why to-do lists feel so good. But here's the trick. You don't need to make to-do lists for everything. You don't need to make the lists overwhelming. Just start with small little things, like make a list of make coffee, stretch for a couple minutes, email one person back. Stacking all of these small wins builds momentum. And that's a gold mine for dopamine. It doesn't matter that you are completing some monumental task. You're just setting small little tasks that you know that you're going to do. And even if the fact of the completion is getting to the end of the day, It doesn't matter. The completion isn't all that exciting for completing the to-do list. It's the act of actually checking things off the to-do list that is the pursuit towards completing the list. And so just make these small lists, check it off. You'll be surprised at how much pleasure is going to be derived and how much it's going to train that dopamine to be released during everyday things, rather than trying to strive to find these massive floods of dopamine from these things that don't have good outcomes, like scrolling on your phone all day or looking for things like drugs.
So do these high spiking dopamine reactions affect our entire like reward system pathway?
Yes, absolutely. So this is why things like scrolling on your phone, these things of just flooding the system with dopamine in the hopes that there might be some good outcome in there, make things like checking things off a to-do list feel so flat, because it's way more fun to scroll on Instagram in the off chance that you might find one little 10-second nugget that gives you laughter. Then you go and you find a to-do list that tells you make coffee, stretch for a couple minutes, email one person back, hang your keys up. Suddenly those things that in the absence of social media type of stimulations, used to feel really good, right? It used to feel really good to check off a little list. Now, once you're sitting there in front of your phone scrolling, or, you know, God forbid that there's the consumption of addictive drug type substances, suddenly your baseline level of dopamine is so high because you're always chasing that novelty, that these small things like going for a walk, which I know it sounds like it might not be a pursuit type of event, but in essence, you're pursuing your health. You're pursuing having a healthier state. You're pursuing going from the start of the walk to the end of the walk. Everything has a start point and a completion point. And once you start to just flood your brain with dopamine, you no longer start to see these things of these small completions of tasks or the pursuit of the completions of tasks to be all that pleasurable. Suddenly going on a walk doesn't seem all that great when you were just bombarded by lights flashing, 10 second videos, these things that are just taking your attention from here to there all over the place. And so what happens is over time, you no longer find pleasure in these small things that used to bring you pleasure. And that's sort of the nefarious endpoint or the nefarious outcome that comes to be from people that, you know, are scrolling on their phone all day. I'm not just using that as a single example. It's just one of the good examples that we see nowadays.
So is there importance in delaying gratification? Like, I've also heard of things called like dopamine fasting or like low dopamine mornings. Is that something of importance? Is there something of importance to like those types of behaviors?
Absolutely. And let's clear it up a little bit. So dopamine fasting, it doesn't mean that you stop making dopamine. So the idea of dopamine fasting has come up in the past of making these behavioral times or these periods of times where you are depleting yourself of any sort of dopamine response in order to resensitize the system. And so this could be like, you know, the ultimate experience of this would be like a sensory deprivation chamber where there's no stimulation of anything. There's nothing giving you dopamine. And there, you know, the idea is that if you deprive yourself of these dopamine releasing events for a certain period of time, you'll start to release dopamine in better accordance with the behavior than you were before. And dopamine fasting doesn't, though, mean that you stop making dopamine. That's biologically impossible. Like I said, regulating dopamine is about having the right amount at the right time. And so what it does mean is cutting out constant high-intensity stimulation so that the baseline sensitivity can reset is a real thing. These receptors do resensitize over time, but it doesn't mean that you have to just completely cut it out altogether and it'll just magically reset. It happens slowly over time. So try spending an hour without your phone. Eat without watching a screen. Go for a walk, just a walk. When you reduce cheap dopamine hits, your brain becomes much more responsive to the real ones. So these quiet moments start to feel meaningful again. Another thing is choosing activities where the, let's say, the training period, if you will, or the pursuit period of that activity is enjoyable. And it's not just the endpoint that's enjoyable. Like, take, for example, marathon running. If you hate running and you're just setting out, I want the goal to run a marathon, but you hate every step along the way of training for the marathon, then doing the marathon itself is going to feel quite flat. You're going to do it and you're going to hit the end and you're going to say, wow, my feet hurt. That was something that I checked off my bucket list. And it's really, it's not going to give you as much pleasure as you think it's going to. But if you actually enjoy running just in and of itself, you enjoy training, setting a goal of doing a marathon gives you something to train for. So it gives you something that you're pursuing, but you're also finding pleasure in the training period itself. Putting those two things together is going to very much train the dopamine to be released at the right time to motivate you towards something that's going to give you pleasure, like finishing the marathon. So what does this mean? It means that you need to train your brain to learn to love the climb. It's not just the summit. And of course, let's not forget the basics. Dopamine isn't just psychological. It is biochemical. What does that mean? Things like sleep, they restore the sensitivity to dopamine receptors. These are things that happen during sleep. Also things like sunlight. For some reason, sunlight helps to regulate the amount of dopamine production. And lastly, exercise. Things like cardiovascular exercise. For some reason, it's like hitting a reset on your whole dopamine system. And we don't know why, but there is evidence to suggest that exercise helps the brain to release the right amount of dopamine at the right time. So what does it all come down to? Don't let dopamine drive you off a cliff, but don't just completely slam the brakes on it either. Guide it, train it, and work with it, right? Use it to build habits that bring you closer to meaning, not just momentary rewards. This is why things like social media can be so addicting. They are built to be addicting. They are built to hijack the system that causes addiction in our brain. They are built so that we are constantly moving on to the next thing quickly in the hopes that there might be a reward. They are built on the uncertainty. This is why things like Reels took off so fast. And then now all of a sudden, once you start watching Reels, then these static posts from Facebook don't look as cool as they used to. When Facebook posts used to come out, they used to be the coolest thing that you could look at. You would just scroll down and you would see what your friends were writing and you had no idea what was going to come up next. What is something wild that my friend is going to say? And then suddenly they came out with these videos and they were called Reels. And now that you're scrolling through Reels, these static posts don't seem as cool as they used to anymore. Why? Because these Reels elicit more of a dopamine response than those static posts do. Which brings us into our last thing, which is something bigger than habit hacks or neurochemistry. This idea that dopamine drives the pursuit, not the prize, has a very deep meaning actually for how we live. Because if you think about it, we're wired for the chase. And if we are wired for the chase, then purpose isn't actually found at the finish line. It's found in the act of moving towards something that matters. We are biologically and psychologically creatures of striving. Of becoming. And when we confuse that with constant achievement, when we expect the goal to satisfy us forever, then we set ourselves up to feel very, very empty. But when we learn to embrace the pursuit itself, we start to find purpose not in what we get, but in who we become while we're getting there. All right, that's our deep dive into dopamine, the molecule of motivation, mischief, and maybe even mastery. So if this episode gave you a new way of thinking about your brain, share it with someone who's stuck in a scroll or maybe someone chasing goals or maybe just someone who needs a little spark. And hey, if you like this episode, your dopamine system might want more. So stick around for the next episode. All right, bye.